Hello and welcome to the Commonweal Policy Podcast. I'm Craig DL, I'm the head of policy at Commonweal. Now, the products that a country makes are in many ways an advert for the country itself. What a country produces either for itself or for export to the world can be a marker of how it would like to be seen in the eyes of the world. This is particularly important in the realm of food and drink. Two of Scotland's keystone exports are salmon and whisky, while Scotch beef and Scotch lamb are also world-renowned. Many countries are famed for their specialty foods and the terroir that created them. But this concept also extends to our manufacturing sectors. From Clyde-built ships to even the lasers I used to make, each one of which came with a little Made in Scotland sign in their manufacturing plate. However, the UK has recently been pushing back against what it sees as regional variation in British goods, with hard legislation such as the Internal Market Bill, and implications of Brexit and softer pressures that have seen the UK-wide supermarkets replace their branding of Scottish goods with UK flags and labels. My guest this week is Ruth Watson, a Commonweal board member and founder of the campaign Keep Scotland the Brand. Hello, Ruth. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Craig. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. Could you give us a quick potted history of what is Keep Scotland the Brand? What do you do there?
Well, Keep Scotland the Brand started over a bag of carrots in my local Copi. I went down to buy some carrots, and the carrots from the local farm that the previous week had been Scottish carrots from Angus suddenly were emblazoned with a half-union flag, and my hand sort of hovered over them as I wondered what was going on. And being a journalist, I thought I'd go back and find out, and looked into it a bit further and learned very quickly that this was part of the Great British campaign that was being started, had started actually during David Cameron's era and sort of the during the Olympics and his sort of Cool Britannia. And it had been sort of roundly derided in the Telegraph and the like in 2012. But something must have happened politically, because in 2014 they decided to resurrect it across the UK, and predominantly weren't do a lot of work in Scotland. And I think that probably the Brexit vote had something to do with the acceleration of that. But it became very clear very quickly that this was going to have a really detrimental effect on Scottish produce, because Scotland is the brand. You know, people, research repeatedly shows that people, for example, in London or New York and Paris, but people across the British Isles will actively choose Scottish produce, even when it is priced slightly higher, because it is synonymous with quality. And it's not just about Scotland and Scotland's produce. There's a cheesemaker, a cheesemonger in Cornwall, who occasionally contacts me to air their concern about the loss of their local brand and the impact that that's having on their dairies. So it's not a Scotland-only issue. And I think that it's something that we just have to be very aware of, is that Scotland's brand is about our market share. It's not about protectionism. It's not about stopping imports from any other part of the British Isles or from overseas. It's about giving customers clarity of choice and confidence in the value in the product that they're buying.
Why do you think you had that such a personal reaction when you were confronted with the carrots?
Because for many years I was a journalist working in Orkney and Shetland, and I did a lot of work with farming and food and drink. And so I was very aware of the importance of the Shetland and the Orkney brand. And I was very aware about the importance of the farm assurance scheme, and that came into being in the 1990s, and basically how that saved Scotland's beef sector following on from BSE. Scotland's Farm Assured Scheme is the first of its kind in the world, and we really should cherish that. And it's actually quite concerning that in some ways that brand is being undermined currently by the loss of abattoirs in Scotland and the takeover of abattoirs by overseas interests that perhaps are finding ways to undermine Scotland's brand. I think, looking at it with my journalist's head on, so that if they can undermine our brand, they can then introduce to our market substandard or lower quality meat, that, or meat of a comparable quality, but from overseas, that will unfairly compete with our farmers. Scotland's farmers are never going to do the stack it high, sell it low model that some countries can do or will do. Our farmers actually work, well, there are many, many issues, obviously, within farming sectors. Our farmers really work very, very hard to very high welfare standards and actually ways in which are very environmentally friendly. And as a vegetarian, I often campaign for Scotland's meat industry, because I think if people are going to eat meat, it should be the kind of meat that's grown in Scotland and reared in Scotland. So then for a while I lived overseas. I was living in Malaysia, and I had a friend who was the buyer for a supermarket chain. He had a $30 million budget for buying for all of Singapore and Malaysia. And we became friends over Orkney cheddar. And he just couldn't get enough of Scotland's bread when he realised he had a kindred spirit. You know, he was telling me, in fact, even last year, he sent me a photograph of his Christmas stall, which was basically Scottish produce everywhere. And he would tell me that they would clear their fish stall when the first line-caught salmon of the season was caught. He would have his buyers on the phone bidding for the Scottish line-caught salmon. And to me, all these amazing, beautiful, exotic fish would be swept away from the stall, and this line-caught salmon would be flown in and given pride of place in the middle of this stall. And that's a power of Scotland's brand. And they would sell whiskey. And so the water in Malaysia wasn't really good for drinking. So I would buy these big water cooler, you know, reverse osmosis water cooler bottles. I think it was like 16 ringgit for one big water cooler bottle. And he would sell litre bottles of Scottish water beside the whiskey for the same price as I was getting this huge water cooler for. Yeah. And beside that, he had a sign. This man was no fool. He had a sign saying Scottish water filtered by Scottish granite for 10,000 years. And that is the power of Scotland's brand.
I've also seen people sell water purported to come from the same spring as a particular whiskey, and therefore it makes the ideal water to add to that drink.
Yeah, totally. I mean, honestly, it's people really don't understand often in this country just how valuable our name and our reputation is, and how many, many millions it's worth to our economy. Not just our economy in terms of money, but actually in terms of goodwill. Because if you tell people when you're traveling, or, you know, when you're overseas that you're Scottish, you almost always get a smile. You know, in our brand has currency that goes beyond money.
I can also say that my now wife and I initially bonded in part over extolling the virtues of really good cheese. So cheese, it makes friendships and more. But back to Keep Scotland the brand, you've been highlighting some of the cases of Scottish labelling disappearing. You mentioned those carrots that initially sparked it off. But where else has this been happening across Scotland?
Well, I was speaking to somebody in the pork sector the other day, and they were telling me that Scotland's pig farmers have been having a really terrible, terrible time of it, as have pig farmers across all of the British Isles. But the only pig processing centre, the major pig processing centre, I'll start then again, but the major pig processing centre, the only one of its kind in Scotland, in Brechin, has recently been under the cosh. It's not been able to take in as many pigs because of a number of circumstances to do with some of it to do with COVID and some of it to do with Brexit. But a new owner is taking it over. And the gentleman I was speaking to within the pig sector was saying that they were really excited about that, because this company, its USP, its unique selling point, is Scotland and Scottish products. And he said that the previous owners, in his view, were more concerned with the generic market. So he said that a lot of the pork being sold, or the pork products being sold, he said if they were going south, it would just get the red tractor slapped on it, and there was no mention of where it had come from. So Scotland's farmers were losing out. People weren't able to actively choose to buy a Scottish product. And so he's very optimistic that actually this new owner, which makes a virtue of selling Scottish produce and the provenance of where the food has come from, and he thinks that that will make a big difference to the potential for their market expanding. And I just think it's not about, you know, sometimes people say, oh, you're so petty. You know, it's not about flags on food. It's about market share. It's about people knowing where their food has come from. And especially with Brexit, as rules start to diverge, it's so important that people are able to protect the quality that comes out of Scotland. You know, in Westminster, they've just announced that they're going to start allowing gene editing in animals, and that's not legal in Scotland. So it, you know, the quality of the feed that's being given to livestock in Scotland, most of our livestock's out on grass and out in fields where it can be, although pigs are still a lot in barns, but it's just so important that people understand how crucial our local food resilience is. When you're looking at, for example, the hauliers not being able to drive up and down the road, you know, all those times that we had shortages on our shelves, there's nowhere in Scotland that's more than 8 miles from a farm. You know, there's no reason for it. We just need to get our short chain food supply back. But that's a rant about local and sort of supporting local. In terms of other items that have had their branding removed, for example, to use another vegetable as an example, Scotland is renowned across the world for our seed potatoes. For a number of reasons, we have really, really good, trusted seed potatoes. Farmers do an amazing job. Our climate really helps. And the scientists that monitor and study these things make sure that everything's really clean. So a lot of countries around the world come to Scotland, and before Brexit, more did. The business is kind of starting to fall off a cliff a bit because of Brexit and the tariffs that have been added. But because of Scotland's reputation, when the people of Kenya were wanting to develop a Kenyan potato market and a Kenyan potato species, like a variety of potato that was suited to the Kenyan climate, it was Scottish scientists that were asked to go over, Scottish farmers that were asked to go over and help them develop this potato. And then they decided they needed a Kenyan seed institute. So it actually was an architect in the wee village near my town called Glams. It was an architect from Glams that was given the contract to design the Kenyan Seed Potato Institute. But when that was reported in one of the farming magazines, it was great British success in potatoes. Now, on the one hand, that is strictly speaking true. But the reason that it matters that Scotland's brand is involved in issues like this, that we get the credit for the work being done, is because it's not the English seed potato farmers that are doing the good work in the same way. It's not, you know, the Irish or the Welsh. It's the Scottish unit. It's specifically the work that's been done in Scotland by the Scottish researchers, the Scottish institutes, and that's why Scotland's brand matters, because when it comes to academic excellence, when it comes to the research and development and the engineering skills and the connections that are made, to have somebody who doesn't know where, you know, the James Hutton Institute is, for example, if you're somebody sitting in Kenya and you want to find out more about potatoes and you pick up an article that says Great British Success Story, well, you might end up going to DEFRA for that advice. And they're certainly very unlikely to be steering you to somewhere that's going to be using Scottish technology, if they've got a pal or a crony with a farm they want to try and give a bung to, in my view. So that's why having clear reporting that shows where this work is being done, it really matters, because it helps Scotland's reputation, it helps our market share, it helps get the research scientists in, make the connections, and it's good for business for Scotland.
You mentioned that this isn't just an issue of nationalistic flag waving. It's not so much about just making sure that the salt iron is on the product instead of a Union Jack, but other more sort of real serious implications on environmental and regulatory standards, just because there are some different standards between Scotland and the rest of the UK.
Oh, it's huge. Absolutely massive. I mean, if you're talking about having confidence in the cleanliness of a product, just look at the water. You know, just, you know, I mean, the Scotland's water is in public hands. Now, it may not be perfect, but it is at least transparent. I mean, in a privatized system in England, they literally are having people brush their teeth and water their fecal matter has flown through. You know, that's not okay. It's horrific. And people really pick up on that. You know, if you're living in a country where water sanitation is an issue, you want to get your produce from a country where things are clean. I mean, and I know that for a fact, because I lived in Malaysia, where people were worried about such things. And that's one of the reasons why those people who could afford to went to international supermarkets to buy produce predominantly from the EU, because they trusted it. Everybody knew there was a sliding scale. South Korea also gets a really good rap. South Korea and Japan, although Japan kind of went down a lot after Fukushima. But if you're looking at international markets that are trusted for cleanliness, then Scotland's right up at the top of that. And it's not just my opinion. There's significant research, a wide body of research that shows that people trust that Scotland's laws, that the non-GM issue is huge. Scotland's position on agriculture is a worldwide reputation that is well earned. I think that the Scottish farmers and the crofters, the smallholders, but also the Scottish government does a huge amount of work to maintain that reputation, and we lose it at our peril. And the problem is that there are, I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but it is very stark to see the way in which our institutions are being undermined without us even realizing it. We're like the frog in the water. You know that story, if you put a frog in a pan of boiling water, it'll jump out. If you put it in a pan of cold water and turn the heat up, it'll sit there and until the water boils it to death, because it doesn't realize what's going on around it. And in some ways, that's what has been going on with us, because we didn't really believe that Westminster would do it to us. You know, we didn't think that was something that they would do. But it's very hard for me as a journalist to look at the evidence before me and not wonder as to how things have come to this pass. So, for example, Scotland's dairy herders, to take it back to food, Scotland's dairy herders, dairy farms have put money into a cooperative and put about a third of the money into that UK-wide cooperative. And dairy processing, it's an expensive business. It's very, very technical. I mean, for example, those dairy farms can have three different breeds of cows. And each of those cows, because of the ear tag that they've got on them, their milk can go to different milk vats. So if you've got, for example, you want to have dairy milk with the cream on top, or you want to have a cow that has a particular kind of milk proteins for a kind of cheese, that could all be done just by the cow passes through the goes in to get milk, and the clever smart tag works out where the milk should go to, and off it goes. So milk processing, it's pretty technical stuff. And the supermarkets have a tendency, a horrific tendency, to sell milk as a loss leader. So actually, even the huge producers like Graham's, I think they get a penny per litre of milk. So, you know, that's not bad news for the consumer, not bad news for the supermarket, but it's really bad news for the farmers. So the facility that was being used by a lot of the farmers within this cooperative in Scotland, it was allowed to run down. And a huge, big, shiny facility was put up in Wales. A huge, big, shiny facility was put up in the Lake District. And then they came to Scotland and went, oh, do you know what, guys? This plant's been so underinvested in. We'll just close it and your milk can go to the Lake District. And that's one of the reasons why now when you go into shops to buy Scottish milk, you'll often see Scottish milk processed in the UK or Scottish milk processed in the British Isles, but you won't see Scottish milk processed in Scotland. And that means that in order for that milk to have any way of coming back up to Scotland, it's got to go from Scottish farms down to the Lake District, get processed, and then get shipped back up again. So not only are you killing the carbon, you know, the carbon footprint's ludicrous, it just adds an extra step within a process where it's very easy for the Scottish brand to fall off the edge. And that has other ramifications. So, for example, in 2018, I always used to buy own brand Scottish butter, because Scottish butter has a really well-deserved reputation bakers, cooks love using Scottish butter because it's really good stuff, because a lot of the time our cows are out on grass, so they're eating grain. So that makes the milk better, or gives the milk different properties. And so Scottish butter, yay, let's go, let's support our Scottish farmers. And then I went in to buy own brand Scottish butter and it disappeared. And I was friends with the local manager at the time in my local supermarket. I went, oi, where's the Scottish butter gone? And he's like, oh, it should be there. Oh, that's odd. Oh, I'll get them to change the labels on it, because it was advertised as Scottish butter. And there was no way that you could see where that had come from. It's just homogenous, you know, British Isles milk. And one of the reasons that matters is because Scotland's cattle are out on grass, they're under less stress. So they often need to have fewer antibiotics and fewer veterinary procedures to keep them healthy. You know, they're happier cows or healthier cows. A lot of the cows from these huge, huge lots down in on English dairy farms are kept in different conditions. They're not out in grass. They're not happy, you know, happy cows trotting about in the fields necessarily. And they often can end up with, you know, more veterinary interventions. So there's a lot of reasons why I kind of like to support Scottish dairy. But that's the thing. If our dairy produce isn't being produced and processed in Scotland and it goes away, you can understand the supermarket going, well, milk's milk and butter's butter, so let's just put it out. Because it's, you know, if you've got a vat of three vats of Scottish milk coming down and 200 vats of English milk, it doesn't make economic sense to split the two up. You can kind of understand that. But actually, because often the shorthand for Britain is England and England is Britain, it doesn't do the English farmers any harm. And then 2 years ago, it was announced that one of the big sort of corporations owns a lot of Scottish farms, or does contracts. That's one of the big corporations that has contracts with a lot of Scottish farms in the northeast of Scotland, which used to have hundreds and hundreds of dairy farms, turned around and said, sorry, guys, we're going to cut from 28 to 14 the numbers of farms you're taking milk from, because there's no demand for Scottish milk produce or Scottish dairy produce. But the reason there's no demand is because people can't see it to buy it. And that's, and so you start looking at it, you go, hang on a second. Now, if I was an evil twin, what would I do to undermine a successful market and to remove the autonomy and the resilience of a nation? Because food security is national security. And if you remove somebody's ability, if you remove a nation's ability to feed itself, you're making that nation vulnerable. You're damaging its economic impact. You're removing confidence in its sense of self. And you end up with a lot of people who actually just end up feeling very disempowered because they can't even feed themselves. It's an issue that I think we aren't worried about enough, but I am very pleased to see that in some measure, I think the success that Keep Scotland the Brand has had is that this is now a very much a live issue. People recognise across Scotland, people are talking about it, and it's very interesting the conversations I have with people within the industry and within the sector, in food and drink, for example, but elsewhere, that they are very aware that this is something we need to be concerned about.
That issue of the supermarkets, does that maybe suggest that at least part of this isn't necessarily a political decision, but more of an economic one, with large supermarkets and their large supply chains looking at large procurement problems and not having the resolution to see Scotland trying to keep their shelves homogeneous across the UK, perhaps because they want a particular brand identity in themselves. You want a Tesco to look like a Tesco anywhere, or just to simplify the logistics chains.
Yeah, I think it could well be that. I think that there are those supermarkets that, especially the ones that have the fake farms, you know, the fake farm brand identity, I think it suits them to just have the one packaging, because then it doesn't matter where your product's coming from. You can just get homogenous A, homogenous B, homogenous C on the shelves. But then you end up with bland Britain, don't you? I mean, that's the thing. it's if everything becomes a product of nowhere, then the world becomes a little beige. And for example, this cheesemonger in Cornwall, they found that was an issue because a lot of their market depended on their USP. You know, it depends on their unique selling point. Why do people choose to buy things? People choose to buy things because the food story behind it appeals to them. You lose the food story when you turn the narrative into a single sentence. And I think that for a lot of Scottish products, like getting back to these pig farmers, they were saying that a big part of the problem they had was that people would use Scottish sounding names to make it seem as though a product came from Scotland. Or they might use something to imply that something that had been reared elsewhere, but had been that had been slaughtered and processed in Scotland was Scottish. You just have to look at Scotch whisky. Now, the Scotch Whisky Association does a tremendous job of protecting its PGI. The Scotch Whisky Association is unique in the world in that it's an association which has ownership of the PGI. It's not a government. Usually it's governments that have that. And they go really after everybody that even implies that something comes from Scotland. So if there was a famous court case recently within the EU where I think it was a Bavarian whisky producer that was called it the Glens or had tartan on it, and they didn't get away with it for very long, and that's because Scotland's brand matters. And you know, you get people saying, "Well, what does it matter if Stornoway Black Pudding doesn't come from Stornoway?" Well, the reason it matters is because if you buy a substandard piece of black pudding that says it's Stornoway Black Pudding, but it's come from America or Taiwan or, you know, Thailand, you know, then you're going to think that all Stornoway Black Pudding is rubbish. And why would you pay extra for Stornoway Black Pudding, the real Stornoway Black Pudding that's come from a crofter near Stornoway? That's actually got a really hard-won reputation for this amazing product. Why would you spend the extra for that if you think that the cheap stuff just tastes pants? So when you support local producers, you're keeping money in the local economy. And that translates into having young families. That translates into having schools. That translates into having a wider cultural continuity in Scotland's rural and coastal communities. And, you know, I mean, it's not just about Scotland's brand. It's about what does that translate into? How does that market share translate into healthy, vibrant communities? How do we put the money into the pockets of local producers and not big corporations?
How could things like the Internal Market Bill, now the Internal Market Act, affect these things, or Brexit affect these things? Do we risk inferior products coming into Scotland and being hidden either by a fake Scottish name or a bland fake farm or by a UK flag?
Yes, absolutely. So, I mean, it's already happening in some ways. So, for example, the next time you buy orange juice or citrus fruit from Morocco, have a look at the label. And I can't remember the name of the chemical, but there's a chemical on that now, which is not legal in the EU. And that chemical soaks through the skin, gets into the fruit. So you're giving your kids a nice piece of fruit that's costing much more now because of Brexit and the tariffs on it. But it's actually been sprayed with a chemical that is thought to, you know, be carcinogenic. So it's already happening. And if you're looking at the gene modification that's being proposed in England, if you're looking at the fact that Scotland has made a determination not to use or to phase out glyphosate and to stop using neonicotinoids, which are like the bee-killing chemicals. And all these promises that were made before Brexit, oh, this won't happen, this, you know, of course we won't do that. And it's like a bonfire of regulations that's beginning to happen in England. And there's a huge concern that the UK version of PGI, it's pretty meaningless because we don't have meaningful trade deals. It doesn't apply with any teeth, even in those countries that have taken on the trade deals, because each trade deal has kind of been negotiated. And it just, I have yet to see any of the new PGIs being applied in countries out with the UK. So I don't understand what it's meant to be doing. It's just like the worst kind of junk jewelry that's going to turn your skin green. You know, it might look good when you wave it at people, but actually when you put it on, it's
ultimately these PGIs they're only as strong as the ability to enforce them, and a large trading bloc like the EU has more enforceable power than a small trading bloc like the UK.
Yes, and actually the evidence is from the trade deals that we've seen already is that the UK is prepared to roll over and just say, yeah, how hard, you know, it's when you look at the glee that's coming out of the Australia's the politicians and New Zealand in light of the trade deals, we've made no demands, we've demanded no protections. It's really, if you want evidence of how damaging Brexit's going to be, you just have to look at the trade deals that are already being struck. And there's no protection because you know, the British bulldog, it's gone off snarling and the world knows it has no teeth.
And I have been trying to find a guest in Australia to talk to me about the UK-Australian trade deal. Haven't managed to secure a date for that yet, but that could be a potential future podcast.
Yeah, I think it would be a really good one. As long as they weren't being told to hide their glee, you know. I mean, I think it would be very hard for anyone to hide their joy because basically they've just got everything they wanted, and it makes no sense either from an animal welfare point of view or from an environmental point of view. It's actually pretty bad. I can't even muster the words to tell you how depressing it is on so many levels that this is all happening. But I mean, even looking at the Scotland salmon sector, now there's a lot of issues with Scotland salmon. I have been looking at and reporting on the situation with fish farms and the problems at fish farms and the animal welfare issue of fish farms for many, many years. So it's by no means a perfect sector, by no means. But before the oil prices took off because of Putin's war in Russia, one salmon was worth more than one barrel of oil to Scotland's economy. And that's huge. So yesterday, Tavish Scott, the chief executive of Salmon Scotland, wrote to the Prime Minister basically saying that the last 18 months have been tough for UK exporters and that they are only now navigating their way through the paperwork and the horror of it all. And he's saying, I, on behalf of our exporters and the 12,000 people who rely on Scottish salmon for your livelihoods, I'm appealing to you and your government to step back from any sort of confrontation with the EU in regards to the trade deal. Now, that just shows you how important Scotland's sectors are to our economy, to coastal communities. And without the powers for Scotland to actually protect our food and drink sector, one fifth of our economy is based in food and drink. One fifth of our jobs are based in food and drink in Scotland in some way, whether it's like making sandwiches or delivering sandwiches. You know what I mean? It's the food and drink sector isn't just about the big boys and the fat cats. It's about all of us. We all have to eat. And I just can't believe that we are in a situation where a country that rears as much good food, that grows as much good food as Scotland does, is facing food insecurity and that so many people are going hungry. It is an abomination to me to see that. I am very heartened by the reports I get from Aldi and Lidl. In fact, Aldi and Lidl have been really supportive of Scotland's brand in ways that really are to be applauded. And that's not them singling Scotland out, that's their business model. Their business model is short chain food supply, and that really works. And I think that if people want to support Scotland's brand and they can go to their high street butchers or their local farmers market or get their local fruit and veg box delivered, that's fantastic. And in terms of supermarkets, if you're able to go and support those businesses that are supporting Scottish produce, I think that does send a very powerful message and puts money in the
right pocket. I think it's really interesting that I think I have good reason to believe that the majority of the Scottish public understand this. One of the most dramatic moments of my involvement with the Scottish Climate Assembly last year was when the Assembly, which was a demographically balanced representative sample of the Scottish population, voted overwhelmingly for a motion in favour of deliberately reducing imports of goods in Scotland on environmental grounds. We, Commonweal, talked about this in our 2019 Green New Deal plan, and we kind of put it in there thinking we're going to get a lot of pushback against this, and we did get a bit, but the public want this. So it was very interesting to see that. Could branding be part of pushing Scotland in that direction?
So, for example, food labelling is reserved to Westminster. So the Scottish sector is limited in what it can force through. But absolutely, certainly, I think that the Keep Scotland the Brand campaign and all the people who have supported it over the last few years can take the credit for a lot of the research that's been coming out in the last few years, where I think that the people can take the credit, some of the credit for this, because research repeatedly shows that the Scottish public want more and want more clearly labelled Scottish food and drink. And the AGM of the Scotland Food and Drink for 3 years did a lot of research looking at this. And one, I remember a speech that was made, and honestly, it just made my little heart fill with joy, because the chief executive of Scotland Food and Drink, an extremely capable man called James Withers, said something along the lines of, in the last year, we have seen a surge in people wanting to buy Scottish produce and to see Scottish produce clearly labelled. And they've done a lot of market research to show a marked and rising awareness within the Scottish public about the importance of Scotland's brand, or words to that effect. I paraphrase. Scotland Food and Drink had done research on the power of Scotland's brand and the awareness within the Scottish general public, and it was remarkable. It was remarkable, the brand recognition of Scotland, the importance that people put on clear Scottish labelling, on food stories, on terroir. It absolutely was off the chart. And I was speaking to people who were involved in food packaging, who were saying that there was one young lad sitting beside me, a kind of like, you know, callow youth, who I said, oh, that's really interesting research. What do you think of that? He said, oh, it's amazing. He said, I'm involved in packaging fruit in Perthshire. And he said, for years, we've just been asked to put the union flag on everything. He said, but this year, we've had over 90% of our clients asking us to put Scottish provenance on the packaging. And that to me was one of the best moments of this campaign, because I knew that was down to the work that people across Scotland have been doing, handing out the leaflets, talking to people in their communities and writing letters. Oh my goodness, the amount of people that I spoke to at this conference who were saying, oh, we've been inundated with letters from people saying that they really want to see better labelling, they want us to support local producers. And that is down to people across Scotland who understand and value Scotland's brand, and the remarkable work that's been done by activists across Scotland. We crowdfunded, all of this has been crowdfunded. I do all of this on a voluntary basis because I just think it's important. I think this is something that I'm doing not just for me, but for Scotland. You know, I'm doing it out of a selfish reason. It's kind of like an extension of my parenting, because I want my kids to eat good food and I want the kids in my community to eat good food. And, you know, it just kind of spreads from there. And And so we crowdfunded through Keep Scotland the Brand enough to get, I think it was 625,000 leaflets printed through iMail. And the gentleman who runs iMail, a man called Lindsay Bruce, who does a huge amount for Scotland, he said he thought it was the biggest crowdfunding and leaflet campaign he'd ever been involved in. And I was speaking to activists. I was invited to do hold a stall and do a talk up in the Black Isle. And activists up in Ross and Sutherland, they had leafleted 96% of the houses in their area. That's a vast area. And that is the importance of Scotland's brand to people. It's not about flag waving. It's about the quality of the food on our plates. It's about the viability of our businesses. It's about the health of our communities. And it's not about protectionism. It's, you know, I mean, I welcome produce to from anywhere, but I want people to have a clear choice. And when you're talking about people at COP26 saying, yes, let's support local. Yes, absolutely. Let's support local. Let's shorten the food supply chain. But I do also welcome imports and exports, partly because exports actually are really good for Scotland's business. It's really good for your brand identity. So in Malaysia, for example, I mean, seriously, the amount of people, it kind of dates when I was there, I was sort of there in the early 2000s. But if people would ask me where I was from and I say, oh, you know, and I'd use the shorthand British because people often didn't know where Scotland was. But then I would say, but I'm Scottish. And they would go, Scotland. And they kind of think of Scotland as this kind of like sort of hazy, maybe it's Ireland, maybe it's this kind of mythical land that rises out of the sea and disappears in the mist. But then they would go, oh, Braveheart. And I'd go, yeah, that's right. And they go, yes. You know? And it's absolutely that. And I know that people would kind of, you know, the way that we'll kind of have, oh, well, I'll go and get a Chinese meal for the evening. I'll go and have an Indian meal for the evening. People go and have a Scottish, you know, and they would perhaps try the miracle of iron brew, or they'd have whiskey, or, you know, and you go to Chinese weddings, for example, and you could tell the status of the family by the quality of the scotch on the tables. And I didn't know this until I went to a Chinese wedding, and in pride of place, there was this Johnny Walker, black label Johnny Walker. I went, oh, no, Scottish whiskey. Oh, yeah, they said, yeah, that's how you know that they've got money. And there's this amazing tradition, I think it's Yam Sing, that you sort of have this big toast, Yam Sing. And if everyone was able to Yam Sing with scotch, that's when you really knew that this family had money. And so you've got high quality Scottish produce being used internationally as markers of prestige or wealth or culture because it's Scotch, it's the real thing. And then you've got people that are watching Braveheart, or now they're watching Outlander, and they're seeing this country, they're seeing this beautiful country, they're seeing tartan. Actually, I was speaking to a Nigerian gentleman once who told me that putting a Scottish flag on produce actually wasn't helpful in a lot of countries like Nigeria, because they don't know what the saltire is, but they do recognise tartan. So that's one of the reasons why I say it's not about flags, it's about clear Scottish identity. And one of the other things, and I can't remember the gentleman's name off the top of my head, I'm afraid, but you've got to be careful, because our trading partners to our south are not always working with our best interests in mind, I would say, because I was contacted by somebody, a translator in the Far East, who said, I'm looking at your campaign and I really like it. And I wondered, do you know that the UK government, when they are selling Scottish produce and talking about Scotland, they're using the Chinese characters for England? I said, no, really? I did not know that. No, I did not know that. So I contacted Scotland Food and Drink. I said, did you know that when Scotland Food and Drink is going out and promoting Scottish produce, the foreign office that's giving you support is using the characters for England? There are characters for Great Britain. There are characters for the United Kingdom. There are characters for Scotland. Did you know they're using the English characters? And I said, no, we didn't know that. And that now, I am told, has been resolved and Scotland's characters are being used. But that comes back down to the whole thing about England being synonymous with Great Britain and the UK, and the UK is England, and you know, it's not something which I think people from overseas do intentionally. It's that they kind of think of Scotland as being separate somehow. But also, of course, within China, you've got the whole issue. The Chinese are very supportive of the England being Great Britain and Great Britain being England because of their fairly expansionist philosophy with likes of, you know, Taiwan and Malacca. Not Malacca. It fits with their expansionist theories. So we have to be careful. And I think that that's one of the reasons why it's so important that we have our own ambassadors, our own trade ambassadors, that we are in control of the narrative, because beware false friends.
So just as we come to the end of the show, what is next for Keep Scotland the Brand? And how can people get in touch with their stories of disappearing Scottish brands or increasingly visible Scottish brands?
So I spend far too much time on social media, my kids will tell you. So you can get in touch via Twitter, via the increasingly awful Facebook and Instagram. So Keep Scotland the Brand, it's kind of difficult because COVID has meant... So with Keep Scotland the Brand, I was going around Scotland sort of doing a speaking tour. People were very kindly asking me to come and talk to them about it and to support them by giving them the information that they needed to distribute the leaflets effectively and have the tools that they needed to be able to have those conversations. And then, of course, COVID came in and put the kibosh on that. But as I say, I do this on a voluntary basis, and I've been doing it since 2017. And I am sort of coming to a limit with what I'm able to do with it. I've been very, very lucky. I do have a column with the national newspaper where I'm able to write about food and drink related issues for everyone to read. But I'm not sure where Keep Scotland the Brand campaign can go other than what we've been doing already, which is, you know, if you have the leaflets, distribute them. If you can, talk to people. I think it's really, really important that people write to supermarkets. That really works. The responses that I have from speaking to people within the sector, letter writing campaigns are massive. We've also got the Send It Back campaign, which is a really good bit of... we've also got the Send It Back campaign, which was suggested to me by an activist in Fife. And that is, you know, if you see something which is badly labelled, and perhaps does not do justice to the Scottish brand, then you make sure that the packaging is clean and you explain why you think it's important that supermarkets clearly support Scotland's farmers and food and drink producers, and you send it back using a free post address, which you can find on the internet for all the supermarkets. And it's a valid customer service issue, so it's okay to do that. It's in some ways it's better than talking, for example, to the tellers about it, because it's not really their job. I would always speak to supermarkets about it. I always speak to supermarket managers. Sometimes I'll speak to the to customer service in store. But if you write a letter, if you send something back to customer service at the central office, those people, A, they're paid quite a lot. B, they have to log every letter that comes into them. C, you can talk to them about why does a NEEP have packaging on it? Doesn't need it. It's a NEEP. And you know, you can also end up talking to them about wider issues, perhaps relating to supporting Scotland's food and drink producers and suggesting different ways that they can go about things. But that means that item, it's getting logged, it has to be replied to, and that will make a difference to the supermarkets in the long run, because when supermarkets get a lot of people writing to them, it does make a difference. They notice it. It's logged. And I also would say that if you can, speak to your local elected representatives, especially the new councillors that are coming in. There's an amazing scheme called the Food for Life Served Here scheme, which enables and empowers the councils to use local procurement. And that is perhaps a lot more organic produce and supporting organic producers. And I haven't even begun to go into the whole nightmare of organic producers because of Brexit. They've had to go through an awful lot to try and get their produce sold overseas. So you're supporting local organic producers. That's good for the local environment. It's good for your kids. It's supporting local food and drink producers. And it's making sure that the short-term food supply is there so that we have the food and drink resilience in our areas. So if, for example, there's a lot of snow, we don't run out of food because we have it locally. If, for example, the hauliers aren't working because the petrol's gone up or they can't get hauliers because of Brexit, we've still got our food and drink supply. It is a great concern to me that with the centralisation of produce, so for example, some of the big supermarkets are taking carrots from Scotland, taking them down to a sorting centre in Manchester, and then sending them back up to Scotland. Now, to me, that's an unacceptable extra step in terms of food miles. But it also means if there are food shortages, where do you think that food's going to go first? Is it going to go to the little village up in the Angus Glens that needs it, where the carrots came from? Or is it going to go to stop the people in Manchester, for example, that might end up rioting on the streets? And so food security, it's not just about feeding our kids now in a cost of living crisis. It's also making sure that the food is always there and always available. And if you're buying local, you're cutting food miles, so you're cutting the costs involved. So hopefully, if you're getting it, for example, through a local farm box shop, you're going to end up getting a lower price on that produce because those extra costs, those extra steps of costs have been removed. So there are lots of reasons why we should protect Scotland's brand. And one of them is to make sure that we can keep food and drink local and on our plates.
I can certainly attest to the power of the kind of letter writing campaign that you've seen. You've seen the effect of it as well. And if you'll forgive the slight plug, Commonweal in our campaign centre, we're starting now to produce a series of teaching guides on how to campaign. And part of that will be on how to write effective letters to politicians and to other stakeholders like supermarkets if you want to be able to get your views across to them. So I'll put a link in the description of this podcast to our campaign centre if you'd like to sign up and take that course. I will also put links to the various places you can find Keep Scotland the Brand. Ruth Watson, thank you for coming onto this show. This has been a fascinating discussion. I feel like we could have gone on for hours. I'll have to get you back at some point to talk about any of the things that we've scratched over but could go deeper into. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. And also, seriously, thank you to all those thousands of people across Scotland who really care about Scotland's brand and who are speaking up for it, because my voice is just one voice, but it's we've raised an honest clamour. It's the people of Scotland who have made so much of this happen. And thank you for everybody who supports Keep Scotland the Brand.
Finish up the podcast, as I always do, by reminding folk that Commonweal as an organisation is entirely funded by our donors and supporters who give us an average of £10 a month. That helps fund all of our policy development, all of our campaigns. It helps fund this podcast as well. So if you're out there, you're listening to this and you want to help us continue the work that we are doing, then please consider donating to Commonweal. And thank you everyone who's been listening to the podcast. Thank you to everyone who's been sharing it, talking about it. Thank you to everyone who's been getting in contact to suggest guests for future episodes. If you're out there and you want to come onto the show to talk about the interesting things you're doing in your community, please get in touch and I'll get you on. And for everyone else, please come back next week.